Good morning, brothers and sisters. Shall we begin our memorial with the singing of hymn number 55? Hymn 55. Immortal, invisible, God only wise, in light inaccessible, hid from our eyes. Most blessed, most glorious, the Ancient of Days, Almighty, victorious, thy great name we praise. Hymn 55. Before listening to Brother Andrew, let's sing another hymn, hymn number 225. Hymn number 225. We come, O God, to bow before thy throne, to pay our solemn vow through thy dear Son. He is our high priest here to incense faithful prayer. Hear, gracious Father, hear his spirit's groan. Hymn 225.
Thank you.
So now we very much look forward to the word of exhortation from Brother Andrew.
Thank you, Brother Brian, and good morning, brothers and sisters. The thoughts I've put together were firstly prompted, as things often are, by something I heard on the radio, which was a series of talks about Nehemiah and the work he did when returning to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls. And as we might remember, Nehemiah worked for a Persian king named Artaxerxes. And his job was the king's cupbearer, it's said. It's not just somebody who stands there holding a cup. It was someone who tested the food and drink for poison before it was served to the king. So it was much more an important role than, say, just being somebody who stood around. He was effectively a bodyguard, protecting the king. And he would have spent a lot of time with the king. And because of this, it seems that they had built up quite a rapport or even a personal relationship. So that when Nehemiah's heart was troubled by the news from Jerusalem, the king sensed it. He knew that there was something wrong. Nehemiah's heart was very troubled, wasn't it, by the news. And he was concerned for the safety of his people and particularly for the capital, the city of Jerusalem. Now, I suppose Nehemiah, his life strikes a chord with me because I can see certain parallels between his and mine, although much on a more diminished scale in my case. But my career started off in catering. I was in food and drink. And yes, I suppose part of my job was making sure we didn't poison anybody. So have a little sort of common thread with Nehemiah there. And then when he got to Jerusalem, his role became very much one of a project manager. And that's what I do now. And in Nehemiah's case, he had a third career, if you like, that he became a governor. And he ruled over Jerusalem, or at least governed it, organized it. And in God's mercy, we all hope that we'll have a place in the kingdom where we too will be helping Jesus, the King, to rule over some little part of it as it is given out according to our talents. So Nehemiah had this task, a big task, and probably something for which he's not particularly well equipped. As I say, his background was in court life, in catering. He wasn't in charge of anybody or anything. His sole purpose was there to safeguard the king, make sure the food and drink was acceptable. So here he was now having to build a wall, not just him physically building a wall, but organising, getting people together, giving them jobs to do, dividing the tasks accordingly, assigning the resources, all the things that a project manager has to do. And he had to do this, of course, with the constant threats from the peoples around him. So we can perhaps just think about his life and think about our lives and what our project is. And I'll just leave that thought with you and we'll come back to that. So what is a project? This project was building a wall. So we have perhaps our project. And once we've thought what that is, we'll need to think along the same lines as Nehemiah did, as how to get things done. It's said, the old adage, you know, how do you eat a whale? And the answer is, well, one bite at a time. And that is what projects are all about, really. It's dividing things into manageable chunks and assigning resources to each of those tasks. Setting goals and deadlines, making sure things are achieved on time. Again, once we've thought what our project is, we might have to think, how much time have we got to achieve that project? Is there any contingency that we can build in to make sure that if we hit on difficult times, that we can still achieve our target and our goal and get the project completed on time? In Nehemiah chapter 4 verse 21 and 23 it says, "So we laboured in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. So neither I, nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, saving that every one of them put off for washing." In chapter 3, we could read about Nehemiah organising the people. And they built the part of the wall that was closest to where their house was. And there was a reason for doing that. But the most important thing was that instead of micromanaging the people, or trying to rush around, being everywhere, checking every brick, making sure people were doing things exactly right and sort of finding fault with this and that. No, he assigned the various family leaders to be in charge of their own little section of wall. And they would, I'm sure, be all the more keen to do a good job because it was right by their house. So if they built some scruffy, shambolic bit of wall, it was that that they'd have to look at every day. And if the city was attacked, that was the bit that the enemies would attack first because it wouldn't be built properly and would easily be pushed over, and then you and your house would be first in line when the enemies invaded. So there was a very powerful reason why people would want to do a good job of the wall near their house. Now, we have things, don't we, that get in our way, that things that distract us, things that interrupt us and even discourage us. And certainly Nehemiah had his share of those. This is from chapter 6. "When word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, the Arab, and the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall, and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors in the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message, 'Come, Let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they were scheming to harm me. So I sent messages to them with this reply. I'm carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it to go down to you? 4 times they sent me the same message, and each time I gave the same answer. A great example. Constant wearing away, constant nagging and interrupting and distracting, but Nehemiah didn't allow himself to be distracted. It's a good lesson for us, whether our distractors be colleagues, relatives, friends, neighbours, whoever they may be. So, coming back to that question, what is our project? Well, there's 2 ways we could look at it, really. On a personal and possibly even a slightly selfish level, we could say, well, our project is salvation. That's what we're working towards. That's what we want. We're hoping to be saved. The bigger and slightly more altruistic answer is that we're trying to do all things to the glory of God. We're trying to please Him. We're trying to serve Him. We're trying to give Him the glory. But of course, in His mercy, the two themes there, the two goals, if you like, of the project will come together, will converge into one. And that's what we hope and pray. Now, Nehemiah, after he had rebuilt the walls, he went back to Susa. That was part of his agreement with the king. Obviously, the king must have replaced Nehemiah as finding a food taster for 12 years. He was obviously not going to just risk eating anything with so much intrigue and so on going on in those sort of courts in those days. But then he got the king's blessing to return to Jerusalem. And what did he find? Did he find that everything had been going on in his absence? That everyone was carrying on the work and progress was being made? Well, no, far from it. He'd found that the project had stalled. And that's a lesson for us. Taking your eye off the ball. We can't assume that our service to God or that our endeavours to walk in the truth, we can just put it on autopilot. We can just leave things tootling along quite happily while we concern ourselves with other things. That is not the way to get the job done. There's a popular expression, perhaps, in the world: it is easier to tear down than to build up. And it's almost scriptural. There is a proverb, well, it's in Ecclesiastes, actually, 3 verse 3, where it says, there's a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build up. Well, Jerusalem's walls had been torn down, hadn't they? And there was a need now to build them up. And I'm sure that it took, although it's no small thing to demolish the walls of a city, it was nevertheless easier to do that than it was to build them up again. So for us, with our project, is there a need to tear something down? Maybe more than one thing. Because it's a way of making a clean start, isn't it? Wiping the slate clean, clearing the ground, as it were, if we're going to build something. We need to build ourselves up. We need to build up others as well. It's part of our walk, isn't it? Part of our service to encourage others, to build them up, to help them. And this is where I think the Ecclesiastes words are more accurate than the worldly saying. Because you think it's easier to tear down than to build up. So what have we got to tear down? Bad habits, wrong priorities, inappropriate goals. Is it easier to tear those down? Well, probably not. But remember, Ecclesiastes says there's a time to tear down and build up. Doesn't say it's easier. Both things are important. Both have to be done. And there is a time for it. Okay, let's think about our project. As I say, when you are managing a project, one of the things you do is break things down into tasks. What needs to be achieved in order to reach that ultimate goal? Seeing as some building up our love of God, build up our love for one another, build up our understanding of God's will, build up our prayer time and our devotion, our meditation, tear down bad habits, tear down distractions, things that come along to lead us in the wrong direction. Build ourselves up with preaching and build ourselves up with worship. There's a lot to do, and you may be able to add to that list also the things that we need to build up and to tear down in order to achieve our goal. There's a story I heard about a missionary in China. And he was a great organiser, very capable man. And his abilities were so outstanding that one of the American companies that was over there, opening factories and offices and so on, tried to hire him. And they offered him a very attractive salary and a very interesting job, lots of responsibility, but he turned it down. He told them God had sent him to China as a missionary, and he thought that would end the matter. But instead, they came back with a better offer, more responsibilities and a bigger salary, and he turned that down too. Finally, they came back and doubled the financial package. It was everything. There's company car, company apartment, you name it, they'd included it. And he finally said to them, look, it's not your salary that's too little. It's the job that's too small. And that is how we should be thinking of things. In the world, things are measured by possessions, by what car you drive, where you live, where you go on holiday. All those things are important to people in the world because they're like status symbols, things that can show how successful you are. But of course, in the truth, those things count for absolutely nothing. And we have a different viewpoint, or we should have, a different perspective from those in the world. It's one thing is sure, that however many years are left to me if Christ remains away, sooner or later I might be lying there on my deathbed, probably looking back across my life, things I'd done. I'm sure that I am not going to be lying there saying, I wish I'd spent more time at work. Oh, I wish I'd stayed later in the office. Absolutely not. And we hear about a work-life balance, don't we? That idea of trying to get things right, to get things in kilter so that each thing doesn't take too much away from the other. Well, work is part of life, as far as we're concerned. It's something we have to do to pay the bills. And If you happen to find something you actually quite enjoy doing, then that's a huge bonus. But at the end of the day, work is about paying the bills to live. Perhaps we need to think about a work-truth balance to ensure that work does not encroach upon our lives in the truth, that we can keep it, as it were, compartmentalized. There's various tools that one can use as a project manager. One's called a RAID log. And RAID stands for risks, assumptions, issues, and dependencies. So obviously risks are things that's going to have a negative impact on your project if they occur. And you look at the likelihood the event will occur and the impact on the project if it does. Assumptions, factors you're assuming are going to be in place that will contribute to the successful result of your project. Issues, something is going wrong with your project and needs managing. And dependencies, any event or work that is either dependent on the result of your project or upon which your project is going to depend. So in a spiritual context, what can we think of? Risks. Letting God down. Letting others down. Letting ourselves down, and ultimately that will result in failure to complete the project. Assumptions. Salvation is assured. That's an assumption. We understand prophecy. We've got it all sussed. All the signs of the times. We've got it all sorted out. The assumption that we'll always have an ecclesia. It'll always be there for us whenever we want it. Well, some of those might be dangerous assumptions. The issues. What do we know about that is affecting our project? That bad habit that we haven't shaken off yet. That disagreement with a brother or a sister that we haven't sorted out yet. That interference from the world that we haven't shut out yet. All those could be issues, things that are affecting what we're doing. And dependencies. Who are we dependent on? Well, we're dependent upon the saving work of Jesus and his mediatorship. We're dependent upon our brothers and sisters to support us. And of course, they are dependent upon us also. Our brothers and our sisters and our children are dependent upon us. Another tool used in project management is called a SWOT analysis. You can use this in the wider business context if you wish. It stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats. We can do our own personal SWOT analysis for our own benefit, not for others. What are our spiritual strengths and weaknesses? What are our spiritual opportunities to make things better, to do things better? And what are the threats to our spiritual well-being? As I say, we can think about that for ourselves. Let's just say that expression once more. It's easier to tear down than to build up. Well, not necessarily. But there is a time to tear down and a time to build up. And there's no time like the present for getting started. So, we need to think now about the central purpose of our being here this morning, about the bread and the wine, and of course, who they remind us of. What was Jesus's great project? What was he sent on earth to achieve? And of course, it was nothing less than the salvation of mankind, salvation of each and every one of us and all those faithful who have turned to him through the ages. He was the author and the finisher of our faith. Did he take his eye off the ball? Far from it. And did he finish his project? Absolutely. His words on the cross tell us that. All the way through, particularly the Gospels, we can see when all these things happened, and this was in fulfillment of the prophecy that said such and such. All the way through, he was showing us what the kingdom was going to be like. He didn't heal every person in the world, but he healed many of those around him to show us what the kingdom would be like without illness, without disease, without suffering. He didn't raise every single dead person, but he raised a few, again, to show what the kingdom would be like. He didn't feed every single person in the world, but he did feed thousands, again, to show them what the kingdom is going to be like. That was his objective, and he achieved it. So much so, all the way through his life, all these things were completed, accomplished, done in accordance with his Father's will, so that at the end, when he was on the cross, he could say, "It is finished." Now, just as Nehemiah went away back to his king, he then returned to see how things were going. And we know that Jesus too has gone away to be with his king, with our Father, and that he one day soon, we pray, will return and find out how we've been doing. And the question is, are we working and working towards the fulfillment of our project? And will we be ready when he returns?
Our memorial hymn is number 259. Lord, thy death and resurrection we show this day. 'Tis a tribute of affection we all should pay. Wine outpoured, bread now broken, of thy sacrifice the token. Even so, as thou hast spoken, we will obey. Hymn 259.
Thank you.
conclude with prayer after we've sung hymn number 127, which speaks of the promised kingdom and about these are they who have contended for their Saviour's honour long, wrestling on till life has ended, following not the sinful throng. Those who well the fight sustained, triumph through the Lamb have gained. Hymn 127.